Accession number 30395, Mr. Barry Summerfield, Reel 11. Now, so you moved back to Pusan without your tank. So what happened when you got to Pusan?
I think there was a very short period of time before we were loaded onto the troop ship.
Now, which troop ship was it? If you remember.
I think we came back. I think we came back on the ferry as well.
Now, what do you remember about that trip? Where were you going to? Back to England?
Yeah, and we came back the same way as we went. Exactly that, I do remember. Once again, we got off at... Oh, no, we were allowed two stops off there. We got off at Singapore, and we got off at Colombo. Remember that.
Anything about those stop-offs?
No, they were very quick. You know, it wasn't a 24-hour job sort of thing. We would have docked in the morning, always, and then we'd be allowed ashore for so many hours, and then you were back on board.
Anything about the trip? Conditions the same? Same ship?
No, conditions the same, yeah. I suppose there was an atmosphere of, you know, relief. You know, you were going home and was it.
The whole regiment were aboard?
The whole regiment, yeah.
And what happened when you got to England? Any sort of reception?
Yeah, we docked at Southampton, as far as I remember. They had the regimental band there. And we went to Tidworth again, I think.
That's going to be that's where you were in camp, the unit, for a while.
Yeah, for a time, anyway. And then we went back to Germany.
Now, what happened at Tidworth camp? Oh, you were there. So you were there. What,
yeah, no, we got this, then we got, you know, leave. Basically, I think we received some new equipment, you know, uniforms and stuff like that.
What was the leave like? I mean, you've been away for a while. You've been in action. What do you remember of your leave? I mean, were you treated differently when you got home as a bit of a hero or just normal?
No, I don't remember that. It didn't seem to me that the attitude that people took were the same as the attitude that I remember at the end of the Second World War. Not at all. I think conditions really were... See, remember, there's still rationing on anyway. I think conditions were still roughly that, you know... there wasn't a great deal of public interest, no. No. So obviously among your family there was, but that was all.
Now, what about back at Tidworth? You got re-equipped? Did you get new Centurions in?
No, because we didn't have any tanks at Tidworth.
Right, so what were you doing at Tidworth then?
Well, nothing. We just went there, got some uniforms and things like that, and then we shipped on leave.
But after leaving me.
That was it. I think we went for about 14 days, or maybe it was 28 days. Can't remember. Then we came back to Tidworth.
Then what?
And then we were shipped back to Germany.
So you just had leave, basically.
That was it. And then we were shipped back to Germany to Lüneburg. The only thing I know is that when we got back to Lüneburg, there were tanks there. They certainly weren't air tanks, because their tanks were in Korea. So we must have been equipped with brand new Centurion tanks.
And any difference?
Probably, yeah. If I remember rightly, the ones that we took out were either Mark II or Mark III, and the ones that we picked up at Lüneburg were Mark III or Mark IV.
Any difference?
The only thing I can remember clearly is that the end of a gun had a different weighting system, a different... they devised a system whereby there was no flash from the gun. It was a dome with holes in it. And that was on the end of the... But that's the only thing I can clearly remember.
Now, how did life carry on there? Because, you're in back on Lüneburg. Same barracks.
Same barracks, and it was very... that's the bit that came hard to me. With them getting back to soldiering proper, as opposed to sort of wartime service. There was there was that entire difference. In other words, you know, it was all spit and polish and back on the square and all that sort of thing. And I found that hard to come to terms with.
In what way? What was the problem? You'd enjoyed it before, hadn't you? You'd enjoyed it before.
Yeah, yeah, but it was just that, I suppose having experienced wartime, as it were, it now came hard to become a peacetime soldier. So I didn't really enjoy it all that much. It was all right. I mean, we had nice barracks there. There was four sergeants to a room. And we had a lovely mess, sergeant's
mess. Now, tell me about the sergeant's mess, because we haven't really, you know, what did the sergeant's mess, what was it like? What sort of functions did it have?
Your sergeant's mess would have been divided into two parts, really. There were the single sergeants, and there were the married sergeants. Now, more or less without exception, the married sergeants all lived off the camp in married quarters. So you never really had a great deal to do with them. Their wives would turn up for functions with the children and all that sort of thing. So in actual fact, the mess was really divided into two parts, your singles and your married. The singles all more or less stuck together, and the married did, and that was it. from the single point of view, more or less every night was a mess night for us. You all dressed up, obviously.
Well, you had proper...
We had blues at that point, yeah, when we got back.
So what would a guest night be like? Can you take us... Because people don't know now. It's a 1950s guest night. It's all changed. For a sergeant's mess.
Right. Now, first and foremost, the president of the mess was the RSM. The RSM was the number one man. No matter when you went into the mess, the RSM was always Sir. He was never ever like you could address the company sergeant major by his first name. He never ever called the regimental sergeant major either anything other than Sir. He was always the number one man, and he was always the man. You had a sergeant in charge of the mess. He was the mess president. It was run like a very, very good club, in actual fact. And everybody respected everything in there. If anybody got a little bit drunk, then you all took care of him. There were never any problems with the sergeant's mess. Occasionally, you would be invited as guest to the corporal's mess.
Now, hang on. What would what would a guest night be like in your sergeant's mess?
A guest night, from start to finish. Again, it would be. You'd all go into dinner. It would be like a really, really official thing. The colonel might have been invited as the guest of honour. It was all very formal.
You'd all be in your blues.
Yeah, you'd all be in your blues. The ladies would all be in their dresses. They were all laid out on the table so that you were all mixed, as it were. Mind you, you knew... within your own squadron, you knew all the sergeants, all the warrant officers, and you knew all their wives, because you would meet them during the course of the week for one thing or another. So you knew everybody within your own squadron. You probably wouldn't know the other squadrons very much, because you didn't deal with them.
Did you always have the wives invited, or did you have the sort of all male?
Oh no, there were the occasional mess night where it was only the men. I think we had a mass function once a month.
Did you have a drink beforehand in the anteroom?
Yes. You go into the bar. You had a big bar and everything. I mean, it was really like a club.
And what would you drink there? Was that beer or whiskey?
Well, no, we'd mostly drink beer.
And then what was the meal like?
None of the lads. We were never very over-orientated towards spirits. Never. It was mainly... basically beer.
So you go into the meal.
Then you'd have. You remember that because we were in Germany, there was no shortage of food. I mean, we lived, you know, high off the hog, as they say. We had the best grub there was. I know what we did do while we were there. We had a couple of schemes out.
I'll come to that.
Well, the mess. We'd have good food. We'd have a three-course meal. wine, the usual toast to the Queen, etc. and so forth. Queen was always first, obviously, and then the regiment. That was it. And then dancing.
Port, would you have this port business that officers have, you know, with all the port rules?
We had certain rules and regulations. I can't remember what they were, but we did have certain rules and regulations. Way to conduct yourself. And then we would have...
It wasn't that formal, it sounds to me, then.
Yes. And then we would have the band. Because remember, we had the regimental band, and the regimental band had a dance band within it, right? So then the dance band would play at the sergeant's mess. If need be, the dance band would play at the officer's mess. But we had our own band as well, and they were very good.
They'd be dancing.
Oh, yes, dancing, yeah, probably full.
Now, on a night, did you have mess games? You know, like the officer's mess do, you know?
No, I don't remember that. Games. No, it was just dancing and just sort of general.
Now, what about drinking habits generally? I mean, because some of the sergeants' messes in Germany in the 50s were very hard drinking. Some of them weren't.
Yeah.
Tell me about how much was drunk, you know?
Quite a lot. What we do typically, if you go through a normal day, the way I can remember it, we'd start off and we'd get up. The sergeants would make their, you know, do their own ablutions and get their room tidy, and then they get dressed, and then they go down to the mess for breakfast. After breakfast, there would be the general parade, and then you'd all, but by that time, you'd be in the denims, and then you'd march your troop off to the tank park, and then you'd work right the way through until nappy break.
Now, what would you be doing in the tank park as a sergeant? We might talk. We'll cover that. We'll come
back as a sergeant. Habits. Nothing except seeing that everybody else did what they were supposed to do.
It's a supervisory role.
Yeah, only. That's it. You never did it yourself. And then nappy break would be about 10:30, half an hour. We would go back to the mess and have 11s or whatever, and then you go back to the tank park and finish off. You'd have lunch, and you always had a drink at lunchtime. So you go into the mess, you'd have a drink before lunch, then you go and have your lunch.
But are we talking a pint there?
Oh yeah, you're talking a pint. Yeah.
Not any more than one.
Well, you might have two. Yeah, it would be.
But nothing too serious.
Depend how much time you had.
And then what in the afternoon?
And then after lunch, you'd be back out, and you'd be doing probably sport. Sport or PT, right, in the afternoon for an hour or so. Playing football, whatever. Whatever games that they were organised on, you'd be getting the men organised. But normally afternoons were a bit recreational as opposed to serious work. If there was anything that needed to be done that hadn't been done in the morning in the tank park, you would go back in the afternoon to do it. But it was a bit unlikely that. And then... you usually used to quit about 4:30, into the mess, get tidied up, and then down to the mess for 6, have drinks until 7, and then go into dinner.
Now, how much did you drink when you got... I mean, a couple of pints at lunchtime, then, or one or two pints at lunchtime. So how much in the
evening? At night
time. How hard was it?
At night time, we would drink quite a bit.
Now, how much?
Well, 6 or 7 pints.
So not excessive? Not as bad as some messes.
Yeah, well
good, depending on your perspective.
Well, yeah, about 6 or 7 pints.
So enough to make
but
you
we might have
drunk.
A couple of we might have a couple of shorts in the evening.
And did any people get drunk or have problems with their drinking amongst the
side? I don't ever recall anybody. I don't ever recall any problems like that. The thing is that I don't know whether it was because it was the cavalry, but you had a certain code, you had a certain standard that you had to live to.
Now tell me about that then.
And you didn't go over it, right? Well, you knew that you could do certain things, and you knew that certain things were taboo, you shouldn't do them. So because I suppose we're nearly all regulars anyway at that point, we respected this. We respected the tradition, and we didn't abuse it. As simple as that. If anybody did get a little bit worse for wear, then, you know, you always took care of them and slid him out before the RSM saw him.
So you could be drunk, but you couldn't be paralytic.
Yes. Yeah, you've got it in and out.
You've got to be able to control yourself. Yes. And after that, you'd be helped out and put to bed.
That was it. Now, if it came to the attention of the RSM, there is a good chance that the following morning you would be called to the RSM's office and he would say, you know, like, this has got to stop. And it stopped. That was the end of it. He'd never argued.
So there was nobody who was drifting into alcoholism?
I never remember seeing anything like that.
So hard drinking, but sensible.
But sensible,
in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
Now, what about going out? I mean, would you go out much there?
We didn't go out a lot as sergeants, but we did, I remember, go to other functions in other messes.
Now,
other sports days.
Now, take me to the corporal's mess. What would happen when you went to the corporal's mess?
Well, it was all a little bit formal, you know, because you were fairly close to your corporal, obviously, because you only had one true corporal. So you were fairly close to him, but he was still a corporal and you were still the sergeant. So there was that dividing line. But I know that the corporal used to drink like bloody fishes.
More than you.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like when you went to one of their mess nights?
Oh, they fly you. They try and get you pissed.
Was it any different from your mess night? I mean, was it less fancy or less... not as good food
It was just as formal. The corporal's mess was just as serious. It was a serious business. You didn't mess about in the mess, in other words. You know, you took it all very seriously. Yeah, they had their traditions the same as we had ours.
But they'd be trying to get you drunk.
Oh, yeah. But the thing was that when you went to another mess, another sergeant's mess, which we did, obviously, from time to time, to other sergeant messes within the area. Because remember, there was a great many troops there in those days. You're talking about the 1950s, and there was thousands and thousands of troops in Germany. So you would be invited to another sergeant's mess too. And, of course, every sergeant's mess, then when they had another sergeant's mess in, was veeing to be better than that sergeant's mess. So there was a lot of goodies floating about.
So they'd be good nights.
That's it, yeah.
And what about sport?
Sport, we were quite heavy on sport, especially football. Germany had a complete football structure, the same as they have in the UK. The Army, I mean, the Army Cup was a big, big, big do.
Did you play or what yourself?
No, well, if I ever did anything, I was refereeing, but that was all I was ever doing. And I didn't referee very much.
Because you've got the quality.
Yeah, but we I suppose you just never got invited. But we went mainly as spectators, you know, to support the team.
We had a
regimental football team.
And what about other sports? What did you play?
What, me personally?
You know, because you say every afternoon.
I played a little bit of cricket, but I wasn't really over enthusiastic about sports. Never have been.
So, what would someone like you do in the afternoon? You know,
I'd be with the men. You know, supervising something or the other.
What, their sports?
Yeah, their sports.
Now the schemes. You said there was a couple of big schemes you went on that you remember.
That's right. Yeah.
What were they like?
Oh, they were quite large. I mean, remember in those days we still had more or less the run of Germany. So you could more or less do what you wanted. We had a huge area around Lüneburg anyway.
We
did four schemes on. We did one big one with the Americans. Remember that?
And what do you remember of it?
It was big. Really, really big. I mean, we drove for bloody miles to get there. There was no transport or any transporters. We went on the road. Because you could do it in those days, you see.
And what would you do when you got there? I mean, what was an exercise like?
It was the same as being down in Warminster, but bigger. It was armies they were using and things like that. I often think that a lot of the things that we did were to impress the Russians that, you know, they had a bloody great force opposing them if they ever tried to get a bit cocky.
Now, what about damage? Because, I mean... Oh, you know, even driving around down a road in a Centurion doesn't do any good.
Yeah, what about, I don't know, there was some system, I don't know what it was, whereby the Germans were given compensation for any damage that we did.
Did you do much damage in your tank?
Well, I mean, we did. Yeah, we did. We would knock down fences and things like that, and plough across ground that was, you know, got corn growing and stuff like that. Yeah. It wasn't that we didn't have any concern. It was just the fact that we were told to go there, and we went there. We knew that whatever happened, the Germans used to moan sometimes. You get a farmer come out and shake his fist at you and things. But basically, the farmers quite liked us, because we also used to live off the land a bit, so we'd go and barter with a farmer's wife for eggs and things like that.
Now, how were you doing? I mean, any changes? Still the same officer? Still Lieutenant Trout?
No, still exactly the same, and it was right up until the time when I got involved.
Now, anything else about your time in Germany then? You still weren't going out much drinking in German towns? So.
No, not a lot, no.
So what else do you remember about your time in Germany?
Not a lot, really. Not a lot. That's basically it, what I remember.
So how did your time come to an end, you know?
Well, had a party for me in the mess.
Now, why were you leaving? Do you see what I mean?
I was demobbed.
But you were a regular, weren't you?
Yeah, but I'd signed on for 7 and 5. That was my original 7 years on and 5 years in reserve. That was what originally happened. But, of course, I finished up doing 8 years because of the Korean War. So I did an extra year. So that meant I only had 4 years to do in the reserve.
Now, why leave, though? I mean, because a lot of people sign on for a second lot, don't
they? What I should have... Yeah, when let's put it this way. In retrospect, I was silly to come out. But you don't know those things at the time.
Now, what was going through your head? Why did you want to leave?
I don't know. I think maybe I was bored. I think. I don't really know. All I know is I wanted to come out. I wanted to be demobbed. So I got demobbed.
And you see, I was wondering where you thought, because did you have any more promotion prospects, or do you think? Because a lot of your contemporaries finish up as majors, you were telling me off the
table
before.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Did you realise you had that sort of potential?
I don't know whether I realised. I probably didn't even think about it. I think I thought I'd just had enough of the army, and that was the end of it. When I look in retrospect, it was the most silly thing I ever did. I should have stayed in the army. I should have.
Why should you have stayed?
Because I'd have had a bloody good career. And I certainly wouldn't. Looking at my contemporaries today, who made major and things like that, the majority of them, I wouldn't have made them a Lance Corporal personally, but there you go. That's the way it is. So I know I could have done well if I'd have stayed in.
Did they speak to you? Did Lieutenant Trouton or your Major or your Colonel?
I suppose they did try and dissuade me, but I was going out.
Did they actually speak to you?
Oh, yeah, they would have done, yes. Yeah.
No offers made of promotion or anything to keep you?
Oh, yeah. I think, if I remember rightly, the Colonel asked me to stay on. But I'd made my mind up and that was it.
Now, so tell me about your party. I mean, because these parties are supposedly quite good fun. Tell me, what do you remember of your party?
Being carried to bed in the end, I think.
You might not remember it too.
Yeah, no,
well, I mean, who would organise it? What would it be like?
Right, it would be a mess, though. It would be organised by the mess president. It wouldn't be official. In the sense that anything would be, it would all be very, very informal. I just remember that in the end, I did get a bit legless. I did.
Was it an emotional do for you? Or were you just glad to be out?
I was just glad that I was leaving, really.
So what happened when you next day woke up with a hangover?
And then I was shipped back to, again, I think, the infamous Tidworth. It was there that I got the famous demob suit.
Now, tell me about that. What was a demob suit like?
It was utility. I had the utility sign in it. I remember that. And they were all standard. It was, in a way... it was like being kitted out to go in the army in reverse. Except you got a hat, you got an overcoat, you got a suit, shoes. They gave you a uniform because they had to do that. So you had to take your uniform with you because remember you were still on the reserve.
I'll come now. When you were demobilised, what was a suit worth having? Because some people really had no time for them. Other people seem to think they were quite good. They may have varied in quality. What was yours like?
I don't think I wore it for very long because once I got back to civilian life, I think I bought my own clothes.
Now, anything else you got on
the boat? I hadn't, in actual fact, come to think of it. I still had quite a few clothes at home, which I was still able to wear.
Now, anything else at demobilisation you had to do? A medical or anything to check your health?
I think we were checked out health-wise. We saw a doctor.
And any sort of gratuity or payments or?
Well, we got all the money that was owing to us from the army. I don't remember getting anything extra.
Now, when you left, so when was it you actually came out?
Must have been January 53.
Now, what were you going to do as a civilian? Do you see what I mean? I mean, you've come out.
I didn't know. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea.
Not even a thought.
Not an iota of what I was going to do with my life. So I did the most logic thing because my people had always been involved in catering in one form or another. I got a job in a pub as a barman.
Now, how did you take to that?
I lasted about 6 weeks.
Now, what was the problem?
I couldn't settle down. That was it in a nutshell. I could not settle down. Now, so I went to another job.
Now, hang on. Why couldn't you settle down? Because this business of acclimatising civilian lifestyle, what was it that prevented you from settling in?
Boredom, I think, as much as anything. It was probably boredom. I was bored. I had nothing to occupy my mind seriously, which I'd had all those years in the army.
You mean being a barman, you just had to pull pints and do the barrels?
That's it. And it.
As opposed to being in charge of a tank crew and.
But it wasn't just that. It was boring. There was. You had no future, nothing to look forward to, you see. So I left there after 6 weeks and went to another barman's job. And that was exactly the same thing. And then I realised...
Now, a lot of soldiers having problems settle down, have a problem with drinking as well, start drinking too much.
No. I mean, I always liked a pint of beer and that was the end of it. So that never changed. But I never had any problems.
So you didn't run out of control at all?
No, you were just bored. Nothing like that. I was just bored. So the second job was a barman with friends of mine who owned a pub. And they'd gone away for 3 weeks and they wanted their manager. So I went in as manager, stayed there for 3 weeks. They came back and I thought, right, this is it. I'm finished. I cannot stay here any longer. So I joined the Merchant Navy.
Now, why the Merchant Navy?
Well, in retrospect, I should have gone back in the army, really. I could have done. But I just never thought about going back in the army. And then I thought, well, somebody said to me, I think, first and foremost, I was going to be seeing more of the world, parts that I hadn't seen. So that was interesting in the first instance. Secondly, I'd realised from the troop ship experience that I was a good sailor. I had no problems at all with the sea. And in all the years I was in the Merchant Navy, I was never, ever, ever sick. Never once.